There's a call for police reform, from defunding to dismantling. Today, a conversation about rethinking policing. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. During the protests that have taken place globally, there's a call for major police reform. In Minneapolis, city leaders discussed the possibility of disbanding their force. Camden, New Jersey shuttered their police department a decade ago and created an entirely new department. Police have a long and violent history with the black communities of South Florida. On today's program, we're devoting the entire hour to looking at the idea of police reform. Does that mean better training? A smaller police force?
We want more resources for things that keep our communities uplifted, but it doesn't have to sit in the police department's budget.
We want to hear from you. We'll take your calls, or you can find us on social media at WLRN Sundial. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Defund the police. This concept has launched a national discussion about the role of police in our communities and whether policing can serve and protect everyone. The idea isn't new. For decades, as law enforcement budgets and legal protections have expanded, activists and academics have called into question their power in society and the problem of systemic racism within departments and leadership. Now, we've assembled a panel to discuss these issues today. Donald M. Jones is a professor of law at the University of Miami. He's the author of three books. His most recent is called Dangerous Spaces: Beyond the Racial Profile. Donald, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us is Tiffany Burke. She's a lead organizer for the Black Lives Matter Alliance in Broward County. Tiffany, thank you for being with us.
Very grateful to be here.
And Omari J. Hardy, he's a Lake Worth Beach City Commissioner. He's recently held a public meeting calling for Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office to wear body cameras and implement a civilian review board. By the way, he's running for District 88 in the Florida House of Representatives. Omari, I appreciate your time today.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
And listeners, we want to hear from you. What do you think should be the role of law enforcement in your community? That one simple question. What do you think should be the role of law enforcement in your community? Give us a call, 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. You can always find us on social media at WLRN Sundial. Briefly, I want to start with all of you on this. I just looking at everything that's happened over the last few weeks with the protests, not just all over the country, but around the world, and on this specific issue, and we've even heard people mention George Floyd's name. The Pope mentioned his name. Just on this issue, I wanted to get a sense from you. Donald, I'll start with you. All that we've seen, how do you place it in the broader scope of the history of race relations, especially between the black community and law enforcement?
Well, we've reached a revolutionary moment in our history. I think the last time we were here would have been around 1968. But we've finally reached a point in which a consensus, or at least an apparent consensus of not just anger, but of deep, troubled concern about the extent to which we've seen injustice done by police to black communities, and they are demanding a change. Sam Jackson said, well, something, the water's broken, something's about to, a new society is about to be born. I think that's where we are. We're on the cusp of at least the potential of creating not just a new police reforms, but a new relationship between blacks and whites, and within that, a new relationship between the blacks and the police.
Tiffany, I wanted to get everybody in on this. Tiffany, you hear that, and you know, I wanted to get your sense of you know, your thoughts on everything that's been going on, and historically. What do you think, this is finally this place where we're going to see big change?
Yeah, I could honestly say, like, you know, being a part of past moments, this energy is definitely a shift. I think that even talking about defunding the police and overall police abolition, you know, having these conversations 4 years ago, people might have looked at me like I had, you know, three heads and like six eyes. And I think that now people are actually looking to police, police abolitionists such as myself and this defunding campaign as a true possibility, a true reality. And we also see a lot of local wins happening across the country. So I think that people are ready. We just had a call about police abolition in this defund campaign on a local level where we had about 200 people join just in Broward County that want to take these efforts seriously. So I think that we're starting to see people who are looking at this with true possibility.
And I want to talk, we're going to talk a lot about the ideas of defunding, dismantling, reform, all of this. But again, I just want to get a sense of everyone's background and your thoughts on the history. And Omari, you're the lawmaker on the panel. You hear all this. I mean, what is this moment? Is it really that big? Because it's not the first time.
You're very right. It's not the first time. You know, I was 22 or 23, unfortunately, when Trayvon Martin was murdered. And, I was about 26 or 27 when we had those rafts of police violence against African-American, young men that were filmed and that resulted in protests around the country. And I'm 30 now, and change is palpable. I feel more than I have ever felt that we have a real opportunity to reform our systems. And I think that's one of the reasons why folks continue to stay out in the streets and continue to protest, because they have faith that it will result in something. So I'm very hopeful. We still have a lot of work to do. We have to prepare for a backlash, but I'm very, very hopeful.
You talk about history and you went back to Trayvon Martin. Donald, you came to Miami to study and understand the McDuffie Rebellion. And so here we are talking about history. What's changed? I mean, what brought you back for that moment anyway?
Well, I think that for me, as a civil rights lawyer, which has been my calling, the issue of police brutality and police misconduct is, I think, something that is sort of like the litmus test of citizenship. If you are a citizen, you should be treated equally by the police. When you're treated like a second-class citizen by police, it's like a deprivation of your citizenship itself. It's like being relegated to a separate caste. And it occurs in a context of years and years of struggle in which many Black communities have felt that the police have placed the community under siege. Not merely that Blacks as individuals are being discriminated against, but the police seem to treat the Black community as a them. And any person who is Black, regardless of whether you're law-abiding or not, is treated as a criminal. And so it's that sense, overwhelming sense for decades, that the police have operated in our communities as a systemically racist institution. And the brutality and the killing is simply the epitome of that racism. And so I was trying to find a place to begin so that, through that, we could empower communities to be full-fledged citizens.
And you look at what happened then, and here we are now, so 30, 40 years later.
Yes.
What's gotten better?
Well, I think that the one thing that's gotten better, the one thing, you look at the statistics, 99% of the killings, 1% of police are charged, 1/4 of them are convicted of that. You still have a culture of impunity, which is driven, I would say, by a culture of fear. And I think that in many ways, our race relations has gotten worse in the last 30 years because of a law and order movement, a tough on crime, which really, and a drug war, which has really been a war against not the drugs, but the Black community itself.
And could you, and real quickly, Donald, remind, because not all of us were here, or some of us weren't even around, what the McDuffie Rebellion was about.
Well, Arthur McDuffie was an insurance man who was driving his motorcycle too fast. This was a speeding violation. He should have gotten a ticket. The police chased him. He refused to stop. When they finally did caught him, okay, good. He was speeding, put him in handcuffs, make him spend the night in jail. They beat him to death. They hit him with such force that parts of his blood was splattered on the roof of a nearby building. This was murder by police. This was murder. He was killed.
They let her try to cover it up.
Yes. And I think they were all acquitted. Janet Reno was a prosecutor. It was a travesty of justice. And it's these kinds of travesties are symbolic of the position of blacks, the powerlessness of blacks, and symbolic of the breaking of the promise of equal protection, the breaking not just to our ears, but to our hearts. And these were, these are typical, and there was, and typically they were no punishment, no, not a slap on the wrist. And so it's like an insult to every black person.
And so important to know this history, but we're going to get to it because I've heard from younger generations about what they know and don't know about that history. And again, just to want to remind people that in talking today, the entire program on this question of law enforcement and what law enforcement reform would look like and where we are in history, what do we need to do to move forward? Is this that pivotal moment, as Donald told us, where we're going to see a changing of, you know, our thinking of policing and our communication between the communities and police? And we want to know from you, what do you think should be the role of law enforcement in your community? 800-743-9576. Find us on social media, WLRN Sundial. Again, talking with Tiffany Burks, a community activist, Donald Jones, a UN law professor, and Omari Hardy, Lake Worth Beach City Commissioner. Tiffany, you got involved in the Black Lives Matter movement, just going back to the protests of 2016. Why? Why did you want to get involved? What was it for you?
So just like Omari, I got radicalized through Trayvon Martin. I was in college going to UCF, so the incident with Trayvon Martin happened 30 minutes away from where I was at college. So that really kind of opened my eyes to police violence in this country, right? Because although George Zimmerman wasn't a police officer, he was acting as one when he committed the act of violence with Trayvon Martin. And so when I moved back down to South Florida after working a corporate job for a year, I realized that if I was going to move back closer to home, I wanted to live a life of meaning. And so I got involved with the Alliance, and one of the first actions I helped core organize was right after Philando Castile and Alton Sterling were murdered by the police in July of 2016. And I think that, you know, co-organizing this action in a period of 3 days and having upwards towards 1,000 people show up in downtown Fort Lauderdale really show me the power of people when they are together and they're angry and they want changes. And so since then, I've seen people really move more radical in their politics and being able to demand and act for different changes on a local level. And I've just seen how power has been able to be influenced by people really working together. And so that's kind of like how I got started and why I've kind of continued.
Something interesting about your story: your father was in South Florida during the McDuffie Rebellion, but do you ever talk about it with him?
You know, it's so interesting because my father, being a black man growing up in Liberty City, he constantly talks about how things that have happened locally and nationally and how they impacted him being a black man growing up in America. And he's definitely somebody who, when interacting with the police, he does fear that, you know, something could happen to him because he sees all these cases happening. So like the McDuffie is not an individual incident that we have talked about at length, but just overall him being a black man in this country, we do talk about that and how it impacts him. And even this energy around people protesting, how it has even reignited energy within his soul that I have not seen in a long time about true changes. So I just see the shifts happening all over, and even with my own father as well, too.
And such an interesting that dichotomy that he was here. He saw what was happening, and now he's watching all of this now. Omari, I mean, you got involved in politics in part because, your childhood and the things that you saw, that kind of pushed you to go in that direction. But, you know, I mean, was that really the big push for you? You felt, being the lawmaker, I can make change that way better?
Yes. I came to office in Lake Worth, which is a city that is 7 minutes away from Mar-a-Lago, if you're in a car, but has the second highest poverty rate in Palm Beach County. And when I moved into this city, there was sort of visible distress. And I wanted to do better for the folks in the community. And that was why I put my hat in the race back in 2017 and I won. And now that I'm in there, I feel a very special responsibility to leave the place better than I you know, it was, you know, when I came in. And right now, given that it, you know, again, as I said, change is really palpable. People are out there in the streets and they're demanding that reforms, you know, are, you know, will be made. And that's where I think we have an opportunity to do something that can end the attack, as Professor Jones said, on the status of African Americans as full-fledged citizens of our community. The fact that police officers can, with impunity, brutalize members of the public, and the fact that they disproportionately brutalize members of the public who are Black, that is an attack on my status as a legally recognized person in this community. And that should not be allowed to stand. And look, as someone who taught civics in middle school, God bless seventh graders who have to take civics in the state of Florida, you know, we teach our kids things like, you know, the rule of law and, you know, separation of powers, you know, the idea that you need different groups, you know, different parts of the government to check and balance each other. But there is one part of local government that has basically gotten away with breaking the law repeatedly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't want to individualize it and make it about the officers, but it's about the institutions and fixing the institutions and making sure that there are systems of justice available.
And we're going to, you know what, I'm going to jump to the phones here and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about what this reform is supposed to look like. Because, again, what we're hearing a lot in these protests is this idea of it's not just asking police to reform. Now we're looking at possibly defunding, dismantling. This is become the big conversation piece at the moment. Let me go to the phones. I want to go to Bob in Fort Lauderdale first. Bob, thank you for waiting. Welcome.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. The police violence against Blacks is horrible, but it's just one facet in all the injustices done against them. And until we have full economic reparations for all the money that's been stolen from them over centuries, things like this are never going to change. And the R word, reparations, is the only word other than the N word that white people hate to say. And as a white person, I'm saying it, okay? We need to do full economic reparations to the African American community and give them the same social, economic, and political power we have, so they can have fair membership in this society that they built.
Bob, thank you for the call. And by the way, interesting, that word did pop up during the Democratic debates a couple of times. Let me get one more call in here before the break. I'm going to go to Sam in Plantation. Sam, welcome.
Thank you. As far as the police are concerned, we have burdened them with all kinds of activities that are not central to law enforcement. They're considered to have the largest mental health institutions or the jails around the country. And more importantly, or certainly equally important, is that we have created all of these laws. I think it was Lao Tse that said, if you create more laws, you will create more criminals. And we have all these laws about drugs, sex, all these things which are help cops advance their careers with multiple arrests, and they're doing nothing to make a better society. They're just doing something to fill up the jails and advance careers of people who don't want to concentrate on murders, rapes, robberies, things that are, in fact, always central to an orderly society.
Sam, this is an interesting point, one that I did bring up with the Fort Lauderdale mayor yesterday. Again, this question, it's been not just local, it's a national question. Do police do too much? Sam, thank you for the call. I appreciate the comments. You can join the conversation, 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. Find us on social media at WLRN Sundial. More with our panel conversation and your calls coming up next. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Let's come back to our panel conversation today, an hour just talking about the state of policing in South Florida and what reform would look like. We're talking with Omari J. Hardy, Lake Worth Beach City Commissioner, Donald M. Jones, constitutional law professor at the University of Miami, and Tiffany Burks, an organizer with the Broward Alliance of Black Lives Matter. Again, the number 800-743-9576. We did get a comment, a question also from one of our listeners via email yesterday, actually. Karen from Fort Lauderdale says this, I listened with interest to your interview with the Fort Lauderdale mayor. I hoped that you would address the issues of the widespread militarization of police departments. I feel this has greatly added to the mistrust and the us versus them atmosphere between citizens and police. Now, she brought up a lot of different issues, but I want to get to this. Donald, let me start with you. She talked about the us versus them.
Yes.
How has the distrust of police within Black communities evolved over time? How did we get to this point, or has it always been this way, us versus them?
Well, I think that the big problem starts outside. See, the problem of racism in the police department has its roots deep in our society. If you go back to the time of 1968 or so, this was also a potentially revolutionary moment. Blacks were demonstrating. At the same time, there were riots in the street. There were long, hot summers. And so what happens is that as Blacks made these demands for change, many whites were afraid, will they move next to me? Will this uproot society because Blacks are now having opportunities? Will it take opportunities away from me? And that created fear. And there was a lot of fear. And the politicians like Nixon said, well, you have a right to be afraid, because he portrayed the civil rights demonstrations as disorder. And he connected that to the riots. Well, you see the Blacks are creating disorder in the streets. And our civilization, he says, is in danger. And so there was already the fear. The fear was there. He just gave it a name. He says, what you're afraid of, you see, is Blacks, because the Blacks are causing the crime. The Blacks are causing disorder. And he basically channeled and churned up and like taking a blower, and it just heated up the flames that were already there, flames of fear. And that those flames crystallized into a law and order movement. And they soon, that was soon channeled into what began under Nixon as a drug war. Ronald Reagan doubled down on that. And once the drug war started, then that's when police began to be militarized, when the federal government began giving them, loaning them vests and tanks, military hardware. They became militarized in part because this was, we were told, a war.
And so, what we heard from politicians and the political push that seeped into the police mentality, that it's us versus them?
Well, you see, it starts with the fact that historically, during slavery, Blacks were associated with crime. There was this the stereotype called Nat. He was a dangerous criminal, and so this Nat became ultimately the urban thug. He was just recycled. So you start with slavery. Slavery was a source, a reservoir of stereotypes. You start with the fact that people are afraid of Blacks. Are they afraid because they're going to take our jobs? They're afraid because they're going to move next to us, or they're the ones that's going to commit rape, and the media began to get into it. The media began to portray these movies, urban movies about Blacks who were robbing and drug dealing and so forth. And so the stereotypes seeped into culture, and it developed through the media, through the drug war. And every night, the news media disproportionately covered violence and crime in the Black community, disproportionately covered. And so the image of the Black community was that this is a war zone, this is a community of criminals. The police were disproportionately arresting Blacks. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Those were the only ones you were seeing. They weren't arresting whites.
There's a lot to consume in that. But so it goes back a long time in history, but really we look at the last 40, 50 years when you started to see the development of this idea. All right. I want to, again, phones are ringing, and I want to get to a couple of calls. Again, the number 800-743-9576. If you can't get through, you can always email us sundial@wlrnnews.org. Let me start with Mike in Miami. Mike, thanks for waiting.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I have a unique situation. I actually defend cops when they get charged with crimes. Numerous times I've been in front of juries. And you know, the biggest change that's happened recently is body cams. Truth is coming out. Finally, truth is coming out. But if they put a body cam on every cop, it changes the way they behave, because they know they're being watched. And letting us sue them or have independent people investigate them, police departments, even good ones, I've seen, are horrible, horrible at policing themselves. And then the police unions get in and they want to do everything internally. We do need to make some changes. But honestly, You also need to walk a mile in a police officer's shoes to understand the crap they go through every day.
Right.
That's why they think it's us versus them, because they do get mistreated and they don't deserve to be hurt, injured, or yelled at any more than you and I. So I think we need to do more to teach them, to give them incentive to act properly, and suing them, firing them, things like that, and body cams will.
Okay.
So good luck to all of you.
Mike, thank you so much. There's a lot there. Mike, thank you. I appreciate that perspective. And, you know, body cams is part of this conversation, too, because it's about what could help us in helping the police. Omari, you know, the thing, too, is this. Look, you've changed your perspective on this, right? You were an advocate for increasing law enforcement in Lake Worth before you got into office, right? I mean, something's changed in your perspective.
Yeah. Many of the things that I thought 3 years ago, I have completely revised them over the last 3 weeks. And that's in part because I feel 3 years ago I wasn't as educated on these issues. And, you know, also when you're running for office and people tell you the issues that they're having in their community, you want to have a strong response to those issues. But I think it's more important for elected officials, again, to educate themselves and to have an intelligent response to the issues that folks, you know, present to you in the community. And to address something that the gentleman who just called in said, it's true that we should empathize with all folks, but police officers, that's a job. It's a profession. And to the extent that we should consider try to walk a mile in their shoes, I wonder to what extent can a police officer walk a mile in my shoes as an African-American man? And that's the fundamental thing here. If you choose to wear a badge and carry a gun, we can't have any bad apples. I was listening, you know, to Chris Rock and said, you know, imagine if Southwest Airlines said all we have is a few bad apples who, you know, contrary to the rest of them who like to land, crash into the mountains. We can't have that when it comes to policing.
You know what? I think about a conversation that I had on the program not too long ago with Broward Sheriff Gregory Tony. And you know, we talked about this lack of trust. He's in his position where he's an African-American man. So he grew up experiencing things as a black man experiencing these things. But now he's wearing the badge. But here's what we asked him about that. Here's what he said.
I have personally been the guy on the ground unjustly with a knee on his neck. I know what it feels like to grasp for air and hope for mercy from people who have been sworn to protect you. And so I understand the discriminatory practices that exist within the criminal justice system, not just law enforcement, but also in the Department of Corrections, as well as in our court proceedings. And so I've taken an approach of what can we do for reform immediately at the law enforcement responsibility, in which I'm tasked to control, manage, and make sure we bring equal justice amongst all people in this community. And so we have interjected new educational practices and training to make sure that we are training our men and women to be much more socially sensitive and understanding to the plights that exist here in this country when it comes to black and brown people.
Tiffany, I want to get your thoughts on that, this idea that, look, he's trying to build that trust. He's trying to bridge that gap. And maybe he's the person in the position because of the fact that he's, again, a black man. But your experience with police officers, is there an effort to try to build that trust and stop the us versus them and bring us all together?
Thank you for asking that question. So just want to talk a little bit about the history, too. So when we think about, like, the us versus them and the mistrust, policing started as slave patrol, right? And it kind of evolved from that. And so when we talk about the us versus them, we have to talk about that history as well, too, right? You started as slave catchers. And so I think that when we discuss policing, even towards today's time, 4 years ago, as a community organizer, we asked for a lot of these things that are considered reforms. We asked for more body cameras. We asked for more de-escalation training. We asked for more racial bias training. We asked for, you know, for them to have more use of force, understanding that. And we got those things. And so we got those things, and police violence is still on the rise, right? We got those things, and BSO still killed Greg Frazier up in Pompano. And so I think it's so important to talk about, we got a lot of the reforms, and that's why a lot of people are calling for defunding, right? Because now we actually want those resources to be allocated, reallocated to things that actually have been proven to keep our communities safe. And so that's something that is so important that needs to be mentioned, is that in order to build trust, I think if people like Gregory Tony and other police chiefs and mayors such as Dean Tranchalis actually work with us and understand fundamentally what we say when we mean to defund the police and right and start adopting those policies, right? We see people going on websites such as 8can'twait.com, and we're actually saying, we don't want you to do that. No, thank you. We already had a lot of those reforms be implemented already. What we want you to actually do is start educating yourself on a website called 8toabolition.com. So 8toabolition.com, because that's where you can actually start working to rebuild the trust between what the people on the ground really want, which is, again, defunding the police.
Again, talking about this role of law enforcement in our community, what do you think the role of law enforcement is in your community? We'd like to hear from you. 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN, or find us on social media at WLRN Sundial. We're talking with Tiffany Burks, community activist Donald Jones, UM law professor, and Omari Hardy, Lake Worth Beach City Commissioner. We did hear from Donna Guthrie on Twitter. She says, cities should no longer negotiate contracts with unions. Officers should be fired for bad acts, and money from police budgets should be used to fund social service organizations. J.R. Channon emailed us, if we try to restructure the police force, we should also restructure the collective bargaining influence of unions. Unions in general make it nearly impossible to get rid of people who shouldn't be there. Again, email us or find us on social media. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Let's dig deeper, though, into this question of reform. Tiffany's talking about, you know what, all those things, okay, but, you know, it's got to be more than that. Now, we keep hearing about defunding, dismantling, and abolishing police. Now, my understanding was that there was some big movement in Camden, New Jersey 10 years ago. What they did was they got rid of their police department, but they connected with the sheriff's department, doubling the size, and they added more police to the area, more cameras to the area. It was actually more policing, but they just got rid of the police department because there were too many issues. And they have decreased crime. They have decreased a lot of problems. They've tried to build that trust with the community. Tiffany, briefly, you know, getting rid of police or disbanding a police department, what's the difference? Because we keep hearing these different words, defunding, dismantling, abolishing. What exactly do you see would be, we have to have security, right?
Yeah, so what we're seeing a lot of times when people are quote-unquote committing crimes is because their basic needs are not being met. What we want is actually for people to have access to having their basic needs being met. Things that we care about are constantly being defunded. Our education system, people having access to affordable housing. What we are saying is that we want more resources such as culturally competent mental health professionals. For example, in Oregon, when somebody calls the police and somebody's having a mental health emergency, that call is automatically rerouted to a community-led organization that is filled with culturally competent, licensed mental health first aid professionals. And so what we're saying is we want more of that. We want people who are actually licensed, trained, and well-equipped to handle people who are having mental health emergencies, because we know locally that police officers are not equipped to handle that. And that's what led to the death of Marlon Woodstock locally, and as well as Linda Sue Davis locally as well in Broward County.
And so
what we're saying is we want, go ahead.
No. So, I mean, look, it's this question, and because this has been brought up before, it's like, let's make sure that we are putting money into services, that not every situation requires armed officers to show up. Omari, let me put it to you as the lawmaker, though. I mean, look, this, we're a well-armed society, and so there's going to be risk and danger. Don't we have to have a well-armed police department, though, to make sure? Because, you look, I mean, we have school shootings. We have people who have AR-15s, and so you have to have a well-armed police department, right?
Well, I would put it to you differently. I would say that, yes, security is necessary. But many of the things that police officers do do not involve the sorts of issues that require them to have a gun, for example. Right. And so, for example, you know, there are lots of, unfortunately, Lake Worth is one of the leaders in the county for arresting people for violating local ordinances. Right. Drinking in front of the, you know, gas station and things of that nature. Right. Those sorts of things really need to be decriminalized. And that's the sort of thing that we're spending so much money criminalizing these petty behaviors. But there are these underlying issues that lead to these things that we're not addressing at all. And what Ms. Burke said was 100% true. From 2003 to 2019, the Sadowski Trust Fund for Affordable Housing was raided every single year, and no one batted an eye.
And that's the money in Tallahassee for affordable housing.
Affordable housing, right. Right. And no one batted an eye. Now, what we're saying in 2020 is that rather than parking a third of our financial resources in police departments across the country, perhaps we should take some of that money and use it to actually improve the lives of the people that you see are committing some of these petty offenses and some of them more major offenses, but that are really a result of the fact that their needs are not being met. That's the real substantive reform that I think lots of people want to see with policing. We don't need as many people carrying guns and badges. We need more social workers. We need more mental health people. We need people who can deal with victims of sex trafficking. We need people who can deal with folks who have various addictions to substances. And frankly, we need economic justice in this country, which is one of the you have lots of people who are economically deprived and they're out there trying to provide for themselves. If we address these issues, we don't need to spend as much money on folks who are wearing a uniform and carrying a gun. These things are really fundamental. And no one batted an eye when we defund public education or affordable housing. But when it comes to defunding something that has been a threat to African-American people and in particular African-American men who appear dangerous to some, we have a problem and we call it radical. I don't think that that's appropriate, and I think we need to take a different approach.
All right, let me go back to the phones. I want to start with Eric in Miami. Eric, thanks, and welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very impressed and happy with all the discussions that's going on. I wanted to reiterate on the caller before me, Mike, on the body cams. I think it has improved things, but I also know that they're able to turn off those body cams, so we need to do something to enforce that. And I'm all for defunding of police, but I think before we defund the police, I think we need to take care of some critical issues such as fixing it within and of course, getting rid of the police union. I think that's a major problem and hiding a lot of the problems. But one idea that I have is doing a countrywide sweep, or I don't know if maybe just a local government sweep, and get independent psychiatrists in there and weeding out any of the bad police that don't meet certain psychological criteria. Because another thing that I also want to reiterate, he was talking, the caller before me, Mike, was saying walking a mile in the shoes of a police. I also agree with the panel that it is their job. So if you're having a hard time doing your job, you should have the ability to talk to a therapist without fear of losing your job or without fear of the blue code of silence and being reevaluated and repositioned as to how, because your involvement in the community is so great and so important. So I think first we need to pour the funding into fixing this problem, getting rid of the union, and then we can defund and put into other aspects of the community, because this is such a big problem countrywide that I don't know how we're going to have enough money,
Eric,
to defund and fix.
You brought up a lot of interesting points. I appreciate the call. Thank you so much. And
thank
again,
you.
If you want to join our conversation, 800-743-9576. Find us on social media, WLRN Sundial. We're going to take a quick break, come back, take more calls, continue this conversation on policing today in our community. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Again, we've assembled a panel of speakers to explore the role of police in South Florida and proposals for reform. Again, talking with Omari J. Hardy, Lake Worth Beach City Commissioner, Donald M. Jones, constitutional law professor at the University of Miami, and Tiffany Burks, an organizer with the Broward Alliance of Black Lives Matter. We're taking your calls. You can always, again, find us on social media, WLRN Sundial. We got an email, yesterday, David from West Palm Beach, asking to examine a different type of policing. He says this: imagine a world, as the Minneapolis government is trying to, a world with different kinds of first responders, depending on the nature of the call. On the surface, that sounds okay. Like they say, maybe the person coming to your house when you call 911 doesn't need to have a gun in every situation. But if we only call in the police for a violent situation, it'll be like calling in the SWAT team. They'll become highly trained for very violent, volatile situations. I would venture to say that they will respond with more aggression and brutality than what we see today. Donald, I want your take on that, this idea that if we only call on police for violence, they're going to get more violent.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. Police are the one group in society which we give a monopoly to use violence. But I think that the problem goes deeper than police. So, for example, people have talked about the bad apple. I think what you have is a rotten barrel. And that rotten barrel is the policies that have that arise out of this culture of fear in which the Black community is treated like an enemy colony, just as like in South Africa, the Bantu stands. Well, they seem to treat the ghetto as this, or like an Indian reservation, and we're the cops are the troops in Fort Apache. And so the Black community is the enemy. And so that framework, that narrative has led to a kind of policing in which the goal is no longer to simply identify a violator. If you look at the stop and frisk, when they just stop literally millions of people, the goal is to intimidate and control communities. That's what, and you talk about the war on guns, the war on crime. The war on crime is we'll arrest people in Fort Lauderdale if they ride a bike without a registration. We'll arrest people who are riding a bike without a helmet, arrest people who are sleeping in the subway. And all this, the war on crime, the war on drugs, are simply excuses to come into the Black community in a hyper-aggressive way with military-style campaigns. It's the, that's the systemic abuse leads to millions of contacts. All you need is one instance where someone says, I don't want to go, and they shoot them. And you see, so what we've got to do is what I want to defund is the war on drugs. I want to defund the war on crime where people are arrested for riding a bicycle without a bell. I want to defund the systemic practices which abuse communities and treat them as if they're an enemy or dangerous population.
Because we're arresting people for little things or things that perhaps and there's been a push, by the way, to, for example, when it comes to marijuana, to not to arrest people. We don't need to have that many people just for possession. For smaller amounts of possession, just a warning. That's the idea.
Most of those are Black. Overwhelmingly, right. The people arrested for cocaine, even though Blacks and whites use cocaine at statistically identical rates. Blacks are arrested 65% of the time, convicted 75% of the time, and 95% of those in prison. Opioid addiction treated as a public health problem. Drug addiction, which is probably also a public health problem, is treated as a crime.
Yeah.
So if we could defund, we spent $1 trillion on the war on drugs. That was 5 years ago. Maybe we were about $1.5 trillion. Imagine if you took that money and now we massively invested in the community. That's where I would like to begin.
A lot of talks about the war on drugs. That in of itself is another conversation. That could take up a whole couple of days. Tiffany, protests have been going on now for three weeks now. We have seen changes implemented across the country, but what changes? And let's specifically look at Fort Lauderdale, where we've had a lot of controversy. What's a change you'd like to see implemented now?
Yeah, so we're actually mobilizing people to really put pressure on the Fort Lauderdale city commissioners to defund the Fort Lauderdale police budget by $10 million. And we want that to happen by their next commission meeting, which is next week, Tuesday, on the 16th. And so we have over 55 people who've already sent emails to all of our commissioners, really pushing them to propose and make a vote to defund the Fort Lauderdale Police Department next week, Tuesday, and to actually reinvest that money into the community. So community-led efforts keep our community safe.
You say that. That's interesting. And so yesterday, again, we had Fort Lauderdale Mayor Dean Trantalis on, and we asked about this idea of defunding police. This is what he said.
That is never going to be on the table. We are not taking protection away from people. Okay, if there are some modifications we need to make in the hiring process, in the disciplinary process, and in any other way, you know, trying to teach our officers better ways in which to handle difficult situations, those are the things that we need to focus on. Anyone who calls for the dismantling of the police department is not seeking reform, they're seeking revenge. Let's be sensible about our choices and not throw out, you know, catchy little phrases that we can chant during demonstrations. Let's talk about real change and real reform.
Now, he was talking there about, you know, again, the dismantling of police. No way. He doesn't want to see that. Tiffany, you think there's going to be movement? He's saying no. And he's saying that just calling for it, it's just a chant you guys like to use.
Actually, this is research that, again, has been put together by decades over the decades by community organizers, lawyers, researchers, and activists. So for him to say it's just a chant, he's ill-informed. We're not seeking revenge. We're actually seeking true restoration and safety for our people. And I just want to include one quick example to show you. On Sunday, we organized and mobilized 3,000 people in downtown Fort Lauderdale. It was peaceful. We had peacekeepers, safety liaisons, police liaisons, marshals, so many different people that we train to keep our actions safe. And it was until Fort Lauderdale Police Department shoved a Black girl onto the concrete and also hit another one in the head with a rubber bullet, sending her to the hospital. So we know how to keep our people safe. It was Fort Lauderdale Police Department that actually incurred violence during our action. And so what we're saying is that we don't want the Fort Lauderdale Police Department to continue to have power to harm our communities. We want them to reimagine, think radically about what safety means. And safety means for us defunding Fort Lauderdale Police Department by $10 million.
And you know what? We have put the invitation out there for the Fort Lauderdale Police Chief to come on the program. Still waiting to hear. Let me go to the phones. I want to go to Josh and Davey. Josh, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you. I wanted to just also add to the conversation that, of course, defund the police is a catchy phrase, but I think a lot of people understand that it means just reduce funding and reallocate funding. It's silly to see so many people trying to take away from that. And I think we can all take a look easily at police departments around the country and see that they are not using their funds appropriately, that there are overtime abuses through the roof, and so they can certainly do with less money and still do better if it is reallocated and they are retrained. And we radically rethink safety, as was just mentioned.
Josh, thank you for the thoughts. Thank you for the call. I appreciate that. Omari, look, so many different things here on reform, the idea of reform. One of the things is you want to see, at least up in Palm Beach County, a civilian review board. What would that look like? Do you think they work?
I think they have to work because it's citizens who should lead the police and not the other way around. And I have to praise Ms. Burks for the coolness with which she responded to Mayor Trantalis's comments. I grew up in Fort Lauderdale. I grew up in Lauderdale Manors. I played basketball at Holiday Park, what's now also Carter Park, used to be Sunland Park, right? So I'm very familiar with Fort Lauderdale and the idea that the mayor of the city where I was born and raised cannot respond to these calls with a little more cool-headedness and open-mindedness really, really distresses me. And I hope that he recognizes that what we need, yes, we need resources to be allocated in ways that actually meet the needs of the people. And to your point, we also need civilians to oversee and provide accountability to the government employees, these police officers who are tasked with serving us. If you serve the public, you should be accountable to the public. And so, yes, I would like to see independent investigations of complaints of excessive use of force and other improprieties. And I would like to see civilian review boards basically hear these complaints after the investigations have been concluded and actually have the ability to take action, including and up to termination of the officer.
Is what we talk about, and as we wrap up today's conversation, this question of how are these protests bringing about change? And Donald, to come back to you, because you said we're seeing this pivotal movement now, pivotal moment in history. Where does it go from here? Because, you know, a lot of times protests, they wane and then everybody kind of just gets back to life. Granted, we're living in a pandemic, so nothing is going back to normal. But what happens now?
Well, I think that hopefully what will happen is we'll keep the pressure up and we will reimagine not just the police, but reimagine the criminal justice system and make it and democratize it. As I hear Ms. Burks and others, what we're calling for is massive reinvestment first, massive reinvestment in communities which have been economically disenfranchised. That's the first thing that needs to happen. A second thing that needs to happen is beyond the Civil Review Board, that's a start. I'll give you credit for a start, but that's a first step. What we really need is community control of police. People in local communities should decide what are the priorities of the police. Are they going to be arresting people for marijuana, or should there be violent crime? Are we going to hire people from the community? Are we going to let police have guns? Let the people come together, let them either at least have control, let them have some power, share the power with the community on who the police are, what they do. Community control of police, massive reinvestment in those communities, not pennies, but billions.
Yeah.
And a third thing is we have to look at the laws. Many of the laws that were created through this prism of fear of black people. Why have we criminalized crack cocaine at 16 times or 20 times what it was originally? The penalty for powdered cocaine. Why do we need these laws? So we need, this is where we need to go. We need to start getting rid of some of these laws, community control, please, and most of all, massive reinvestment in those communities.
Briefly, Tiffany, you started to touch on some of the things that you're doing with the commission in Fort Lauderdale. But where do the protests go now? Where do you see this evolving?
Yes, so definitely we are continuing to build power with people. We've done a lot of training since the protest, and we're inviting every single person who believes in our campaign to go to bit.ly/donedyingdefundflpd. So again, bit.ly/donedyingdefundflpd. We're asking everybody to join the fight with us. We know in order to change things, we have to build power, put pressure on people to do the right things. So Dean Trenchalis, he might think that changes are not coming, but we're going to put power on it, and it will happen. We're defunding Fort Lauderdale Police Department, and it's starting on Tuesday, June 16th.
And I'm going to have to end it there. So much to talk about, so little time. I want to thank my guests, Omari J. Hardy, Lake Worth Beach City Commissioner, Donald M. Jones, constitutional law professor at the University of Miami, and Tiffany Burks, organizer with the Broward Alliance of Black Lives Matter. Folks, thank you so much. I appreciate the time and the conversation.
Thank you so much.
And you can keep this going on social media, on Twitter, on Facebook at WLRN Sundial. That's our program for today. Sundial is produced by senior producer Chris Remington. Leslie Ovai is our producer and social media editor. Our engagement editor, Katie Lepre. Our news director, Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman, our editorial director. Program director, Jason Zapka. Technical supervisor, Peter J. Meritz. I'm Luis Hernandez. We'll talk again on Monday.